at center and coming in as Lube. Hewitt-Dyke center net. McDonald scores! Matty McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
And he's stopped by Markstrom from point blank range.
You can put it in the win column!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay, we are underway. It is Tuesday, April 2nd. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Pat Steinberg along with you here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome on the Hot Stove Lounge. And welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. We got a busy hour coming up. We'll focus in on Calgary's blue line a little bit later on. But right now, let's focus in on Calgary between the pipes as we say hello to Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com as we say hello to Frank from Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. Joins us every Tuesday here on Flames Talk. And, you know, Frank, as we dive in, Jacob Markstrom's going to get his second straight start on Tuesday night against the Anaheim Ducks. And it's something that, you know, online there have been some Flames fans who have reacted to that and saying, why aren't they playing Dustin Wolf? Why go back to Jacob Markstrom and why play him again? And my point and the point that Wes Gilbertson and I made in the first hour of the program is that, look, this is a guy that there's no guarantee is going to be dealt. This is a guy who's been the MVP all season. He wants to play. You've got to balance Jacob playing games and his competitive nature with the fact that you need to get Dustin Wolf his time. So I guess I ask you, is there a world in this conversation where Jacob is back with the Flames next year? Is there a world where he doesn't get dealt in the summertime?
Yeah, I think there's a world that that's a possibility where Jacob Markstrom is essentially mentoring Dustin Wolf next season and beyond. I don't know what percentage chance I would put it on a likelihood, but I think it's like probably something like 40 or 50%. Because the truth of the matter is, if the Flames are moving off of Jacob Markstrom, one, they want to get a significant return in order to do so. And two, Markstrom holds all the cards and he doesn't necessarily have to agree to anything. And I think if he wants to try and get involved in the situation and try and leverage his way somewhere, I don't know how successful that's going to be because the Flames are going to be setting a high bar and ask, and they're not going to be backed into a situation sort of like they were with Noah Hanifin, where they didn't have very many options to choose from. So does that present a path or, you know, I think I'm outlining the sort of doomsday worst case scenario, but I think you have to at least wonder about the possibility of that, given where, you know, Markstrom is and what he means and the value he brings to the Flames.
Which is why I think it's important if you're Calgary to make sure that you're not alienating a guy who has A, been your MVP this year, and B, is a guy who could very well be back with you next year. That's why, you know, my pushback has been, you kind of have to make this a bit of a balancing act with getting Wolf important minutes, but also Jacob's still a big part of your team regardless of if you're making the playoffs or not.
It is a delicate dance. And the other part is, like, we also know that Markstrom wasn't fully healthy. So there's that part to weigh as well. Like, how much of that has been injury or nagging injury focused that makes it just a tougher task to really get the proper balance.
Yeah. And then the only other Calgary name I wanted to ask you about is a guy that, you know, it seems like whenever we're taking phone calls after games or reading texts, there's questions that pop up and have popped up all season long about Nazem Kadri. And the season that he's having, he's been probably their most consistent skater all year long, and he's been a real revelation, but he's been a real positive, really bright spot for the Flames this year. But
Got 5 years left on his deal, and a lot of people wonder if, well, if this is the time to sell high. I don't know how realistic that is, knowing what's left on his contract. But if the Flames were to go down that road, would there be a market for Nazem Kadri in your eyes?
I think there would be. I think he's really played well enough this year to make one. He's basically having the second best season of his career, and he's probably going to tie or be really close to tying his career high. He did have 30 twice with the Leafs, so that part is inaccurate, I was going to say. But his best season ever, 87 points, that led him to that contract in free agency, this is going to be his second best season to that mark. And, you know, mid-20s in goals, that's now consistently after what would some people would probably say a disappointing year last year, the cap going up. And the biggest issue with Kadri is the term, but if you're a general manager, let's say the Flames are inclined and or interested in moving that contract, which I don't have any sense that they are. But let's say that is the case. There's certainly, if you can see Tomáš Hertl moving with the term left on his deal at his age, at a higher cap hit, Kadri doesn't have the injury history or question marks and doesn't seem to be slowing down. A lot of people thought the Sharks, and this was coming directly from NHL general managers, they think the Sharks could have moved Hertl this summer upcoming with a thin free agent crop at full boat, $8+ million. And so that tells me that there would be a real market and window for Kadri. Yeah. And basically, the question that you'd have to ask yourself if you're a general manager is, would we sign Nazem Kadri to 5 years times $7 million if he were a free agent? I bet a lot of people would say yes.
Yeah, especially knowing what he's done this season and how important he's been to the team. I give him a lot of credit. And you know, I just part of the reason why so many have asked is that I don't think there's any doubt that Kadri is all about winning, and that's the only thing that matters to him. And a team that might be taking a step back for the next couple of years may not be exactly what he's looking for. But at the same time, he signed the contract. So even if there is a desire to go elsewhere, it's not like that's a guarantee it's going to happen, right?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a great point to make. And again, I don't know how interested the Flames are in making that happen. Yeah. I think they really want to try and be as competitive as possible in these sort of dip years, if that's what you want to call it. We're always struggling to come up with some terms for what the Flames are going through, but I think everyone recognizes that these are relative down years, and that's the sort of plan and thought process. If you want to be competitive, keeping Kadri is a strong way to do it.
Yeah. Yep. And as you mentioned last week and in your chat with Craig Conroy from general managers meetings, with all that cap space, not like he's looking to just completely squirrel it away. There's going to be some potential unrestricted free agent targets that Craig's going to go after as well. Probably not the long-term variety. But
no, that's the biggest thing for them that they're focusing on is term. He said specifically 2, 3, or 4 year deals.
Yep. Which is exactly what this kind of transitional phase is going to be for them, right?
And maybe Kadri is a carryover then.
Yep. Yeah, 5 years left on the deal.
Why go out and spend additional money when you know you have someone there that fits?
Yep.
The only thing that might pop up is if Kadri or someone else or Markstrom, since we talked about him, does he raise his hand and say, hey, like, I know I've got some control here, but could you get me to a team that has a chance to win in the next 2 or 3 years?
Yep. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He is our daily face-off NHL insider. That takes care of the Flames stuff. They've got a little bit more than 2 weeks to go in their regular season. So let's, I'm curious at the bottom of this playoff chase in the Western Conference. I'm curious your observations of the Los Angeles Kings, who are seemingly have no interest in shutting the door and making sure that they're going to close out that final playoff spot. What have your observations been on this Kings team and why it's been such a grind for them here of late?
Man, what a weird year it's been for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they started off so hot. They got the goaltending right out of the gate from Talbot. And I was like, man, this is a big reason why I picked this team a couple years ago, not this season, last one, to win the Pacific, is because there are some really good pieces here. There's some depth. There's a lot to like about what the Kings have built. And then you get a season like this from Quinton Byfield and you go, man, they've really got something that they're cooking with here. And it seems like Pierre-Luc Dubois has thrown a big wrench into that. I think they've sort of, not even in so many veiled ways, have basically said, like, this guy has been a square peg in a round hole. And I don't know how you fix that. Speaking of term remaining on his deal and how that might be really difficult.
Yeah.
But there, at least it kind of felt like for a team that lost its way, once you got to, you know, maybe like 8 games after the coaching change, they've played better. And so I don't think they're world beaters. I don't think they are authentic Stanley Cup contenders in the sense that they could go on a run to win. But at the same time, I don't think all is lost either. And I think they could make life really difficult for teams with that 1-3-1 that they play in the postseason. Although, unfortunately for them, it hasn't helped them in the last 2 rounds that they played Edmonton. So maybe they'll play someone else this time.
You still like the Kings and fending off the Blues here down the stretch?
I do. I mean, they've got the game in hand. I know they've been just okay of late. I just think there's a real clear talent disparity between the Kings and Blues, and I guess I'm just not really a big believer in St. Louis in general.
Yeah, no, and understandably so. It's they're there, but you know, a lot of the underlying metrics don't paint that St. Louis team in a very positive light. What about
it's like saying the Islanders are there, but like, are they really?
Exactly. Well, that's what I was just about to ask you. Like, you've got Washington, Philadelphia, Detroit, all kind of fighting for, Detroit's fighting for 1 spot, Philadelphia, Washington in the mix for 2 spots. Do you have a good feel as to how that plays itself out? Or if you were putting money down, do you have a good feel in terms of which way you'd go in terms of how that plays itself out?
I mean, I think it's basically 2 teams left fighting for 1 spot. And that sounds funny to say because the 1 team that I think is in is the Caps. Now, a game tonight might go a long way against Buffalo in helping determine that, but part of it's math. I mean, the Caps have 3 additional cracks at it with the games in hand that they have over the Flyers.
Right.
So what I really think it is the Flyers and Red Wings, you know, sort of head to head, who gets that 8th seed. And I don't really have much, like, aside from a feel and thinking like the Red Wings might be the more talented team, I don't have any evidence with the way that they've played to support that. And so someone listening might say, Frank, have you noticed that the Flyers have lost 5 in a row? And of course I have, but I watch a game like last night with 9 seconds left to play. The Flyers don't quit and they've struggled to score, and they've now thrust a rookie netminder in there in Ivan Fedotov from Russia, who just arrived on North American soil last week.
Yeah.
There's a lot happening, and Torts, it continues to bark, but I like the fact that that team hasn't quit and that they've kept a stranglehold on that position. And I just envision that continuing on.
Can you tell us a little, you're in the Philly market. Can you tell us a little bit more about Fedotov and just the bizarre circumstances that got him over here? And now here he is playing, being in North America for the better part of 1 week.
It's a wild story. And so to back up a few years, he was a late round pick by the Flyers 9 years ago. They signed him to an entry-level contract a couple years ago, and he was ready to leave CSKA Moscow, the Red Army team, and come over to the Flyers. And someone scooped him up on the way to the airport and said, "Oh, hey, Mr. Fedotov, you haven't fulfilled your Russian military conscription service." And they actually banished him to Siberia for an entire year, where he served in, I think, the army. And after that service was completed, while he was still under contract with the Flyers, the CSKA team totally ignored the transfer agreement that's in place and signed him to a contract in Russia, which is a big no-no. Like, you cannot sign a player who has a valid and binding contract elsewhere. And so after a so-so season, a 914 save percentage, which in the NHL is great, but in the KHL is just okay, they terminated his contract, and also Sergei Fedorov, their coach, got fired, and all of a sudden he was free game to come over. But it's not funny, because this still actually happens. The Flyers, they weren't really able to breathe any sort of sigh of relief here until Fedotov actually landed on North American soil and someone could pick him up from the airport. I think the whole time they were wondering what happens next in this crazy story. Until we have him in our grasp, so to speak, then they weren't really able to be comfortable. And now he's here after playing a full season in the KHL and gets used to his, you know, North American teammates, goes to the wrong net last night in OT, which was kind of funny. Varlamov punted him to the other net and comes in, and the first shot he faces in the NHL is a breakaway from Matt Barzal, stops him at 6'7". He's tied for the tallest goalie ever to play in the NHL. And it's kind of an interesting story unfolding for the Flyers that they already lost their number one goalie this year when Carter Hart took his leave of absence to face charges for sexual assault.
Yeah. And that's, so does Fedotov, like, do they see him factoring in a big way going forward here? Like, is he a guy they see as a potential big future piece for him?
Yes. They think that he can be the next guy. The only thing is that at age 27, he's in the last year of his deal and is a pending free agent, and so could potentially be up for grabs to everyone this summer on July 1. But the Flyers are working to get an extension done. They think he could be quite literally a big part of their future and someone that takes the ball and runs with it in light of what happened to Carter Hart, or what Carter Hart did, I should say.
Yep. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli, our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. Just a couple of more for you. Do we have any idea what's going on with Elias Lindholm in Vancouver? Is there any feel as to what the overall situation is, how serious it is, and how it could affect that team going into the playoffs?
I personally don't have a ton of insight. What I would say is it's been a while since he's been right, but there was then immediate speculation where people were like, "Oh, well, did the Flames trade damaged goods?" And the answer to that is no. The injury, I believe, occurred shortly after his arrival in Van. And I think what they're looking at it in terms of the overall perspective, the other thing people were commenting on was, well, you know, clearly Lindholm being a pending UFA, he's going to want to make sure that he's right, you know, in light of that UFA status. And I don't think that has anything to do with it either. I think the Canucks want to make sure that they can get Lindholm as close to 100% as possible before the playoffs start. Same thing with Demko. I think they're willing to take their time and make sure that it's done right, so that once you get to the biggest juncture of the season, when everything counts for real, that you've got your players in the best shape they could possibly be in, given the circumstances.
Okay. What I know you talked about this on the latest DFO rundown. What's going on with Arizona? What do we know about their long-term future and anything new in terms of their future in that market?
Nothing has really changed or developed. The Coyotes are continuing to work on winning the auction for the piece of land that they'd like to build an arena on. There's a long process that I think would play out even if they're able to win the arena. There's environmental studies and traffic studies. There's a million things. Just ask Ryan Pike what goes into that, because he's as well-versed on it in Calgary as anyone I've ever seen.
Agreed.
And so that part is off to one side. And then the NHL is saying, well, okay, let's say they win it, which they claim they will. What's the chance success they have of actually getting an arena built? That's a whole other part of it. And then it's, can we continue to allow this team to play in a 4,500 seat arena for the time being? And if not, and if no one's comfortable with that and or the ownership, what are the avenues and possibilities that we can explore to potentially wrestle back control of this team, which is not going to be an easy task? And I'm not sure. I don't know that the NHL is sure that they're up for even taking on that fight. So in the meantime, there's lots of wheels spinning in the background, and that's basically where they're at, that they're trying to explore the other alternatives while the Coyotes are focused on that new arena.
Other alternatives being like temporary relocation, that type of thing?
I would say it's permanent relocation. I think what the league essentially is looking into is, can, rather than fight Alex Mariuolo first, the owner, could we have him broker a deal where we pay him a market rate for the franchise, the NHL takes ownership of it, and then collects a big relocation fee on behalf of its owners to send the Coyotes to Salt Lake City? And if not, if he's not a willing participant in that, there's something in the NHL Constitution called an involuntary termination. And that would probably involve many hours of $1,000 per hour legal fees. Plus, is there a bad look in terms of involuntarily terminating a franchise agreement? Plus, will the league ultimately be successful if they decide to go down that path? You know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, they don't leave any stone unturned. Mm-hmm. So if they do decide to pursue it, they're going to do it with airtight confidence that they're going to win, because that's all they do. I don't know. It's too early to say which way that's going to go yet. And it just feels like the longer this drags on, the less likely to me that the Coyotes will continue in Arizona. And then the back part of it is, how does the league save face in that market? I think you promise an expansion franchise on your way out that one will return to Arizona in the next 5 years. And if you're Ryan Smith in Salt Lake City, you're looking at the young pieces that the Coyotes have assembled, and you're looking at all the draft picks that they have, and you say, I know it's going to be expensive, but I'd much rather start with this as my core rather than starting from scratch in expansion.
So it feels like maybe this thing is closer to actually coming to a head than it's ever been, hey?
No one will tell you that, but yes.
Okay.
And they've got lots of runway. I mean, lots is a relative term, but May 21st or something was the date of the announcement of the relocation, maybe May 31st from Atlanta to Winnipeg.
Winnipeg, yeah.
They've got basically 6 to 8 weeks to pull that off. And short of that, I'd say if we get through that the Coyotes are probably returning for another season at the mullet.
Okay. And finally, Washington, what did we learn? I guess it was late last week. There'd been talks that maybe the Capitals were going to kind of move in that market to a different spot. Sounds like that's not happening anymore, right?
So it was right out of the playbook that owners use all the time, which is threaten to move elsewhere, and then all of a sudden the city that you're currently playing in comes up with a nice large check for you for renovations. And so I think Don't quote me on the numbers. They might be slightly off, but what I believe I saw was when the Caps and Ted Leonsis also owns the Wizards, so both tenants in the same building. When they originally went to Washington, D.C. officials and said, hey, we'd like to, you know, do some renovations at Capital One Center or Capital One Arena, what would you be willing to contribute? I think they were somewhere in the $200 to $300 million range. And then on the day that the Caps announced that they were moving the team to Arlington, Virginia, so across the river and near the Ronald Reagan Airport, all of a sudden that number went from $200 to $500 million. And then on the dotted line last week, Ted Leonsis signed to get $515 million from Washington, D.C. after it didn't work out in Virginia. So whether they actually plan to move to Virginia or not, I think remains up for debate. But nonetheless, the point is that the Caps and Wizards have leveraged a significant chunk of money for real big renovations at a really cool downtown arena that I think a lot of people didn't want to see them leave.
Yep. Good stuff as always, Frank. Appreciate the insight. We'll do it again next week, and have yourself a great rest of your week. Hey, thanks for doing this.
See you, Pat.
There he is, Frank Saravalli, every Tuesday with us here on Flames Talk Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. And as always, Frank Saravalli brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's go inside hockey on this Tuesday for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op, where life's in store. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you here at the Scotiabank Saddledome on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. You know, one of the more interesting stories of late has been this new look on defense for the Calgary Flames since I guess going all the way back to the Chris Tanev trade is when this began. And along the way, with Zadorov being dealt in late November, we've seen Braden Pahal claimed on waivers.
You might even go back to when they got Pahal on waivers that coming out of the All-Star break. Yeah.
So Pahal gets claimed on waivers. They've also claimed Joel Hanley on waivers. On the other side of things, Tanev, Hanifin most recently traded. Obviously, Zadorov was dealt. Miramanov comes back as part of the Hanifin trade. You know, over the last little, Shillington's only been back since the new year as well, since just before the All-Star break. Right. So, I mean, this blue line is so much different.
If I can just add, Nikita Okochuk arrives in that's a deadline day deal as well.
So you have Okochuk, who has played a little bit, Hanley, who's played a little bit. You've got Pahal, who has played every game pretty much, if not every game, since he's been claimed on waivers. Shillington's been playing and has played every game except for the one game he missed with illness in St. Louis. So, I mean, it's a completely new-look blue line here as we go down the stretch and the Flames play out the string. One of those new guys is Joel Hanley. And here's a guy that gets claimed on waivers, was likely going to the American League in Dallas if he cleared waivers. Flames claim him, and now he's going to play his third straight game on a pairing with Rasmus Anderson in a top four role. He's played just over 20 minutes against St. Louis, a little under 18 minutes against LA on Saturday. Like, he's all of a sudden being put in a rather high leverage role, isn't he? Like, and this is what happens when you're working through a new look defense, right?
Yeah, and through new look pairings, trying to figure out who might have some chemistry, trying to figure out who can handle what sort of minutes, and in my opinion anyways, and I'm curious how you feel about this, buddy, but I think this is an audition for sort of the summer conversations as well. What do we have on the blue line? Who are we comfortable playing? What sort of minutes? How much opportunity can we leave for Jeremy Poirier or an Ilya Solovyov? Are we comfortable with the sort of depth we'll have if we don't think those guys are ready? And probably most of all, do we need to go out and sign a top four defenseman?
Yep, which is one of the big conversations going into the offseason. So just wanted to play this. Had a chance on Monday after practice to chat with Joel Hanley. Here's it again. I don't know if he thought he was going to be playing top 4 minutes and playing on a pairing with Rasmus Anderson when he was acquired, but opportunity's knocking, and he's doing his best to take advantage of it. Had a chance to chat with Flames defenseman Joel Hanley on Monday.
Just wanted to ask you about, you know, last couple of games, you've gotten some solid ice time. You've been playing with Ras. I wonder if when you got the call that you were coming here, if that was something that was kind of on your bingo card, playing some top pair of minutes like that. What's it been like for you?
Oh, it's been good. No, like, I don't know if it was on my bingo card, but, you know, definitely when the opportunity came, like, it was something I was looking forward to. He's obviously a great player, and he's fun to play with, so... you know, if the coaches put the confidence in me to play there, like, you know, I just obviously want to do my best and, you know, play my game. So it's been fun so far.
How have you felt in those couple of games?
You know, I felt pretty good. You know, every game brings its own, you know, its own game and everything. But, you know, those games were good. And, you know, I felt like I got to my game, played simple. And, you know, Raz is a great player. So, anytime you get to play with someone like that, it's fun.
Tell me about playing with Raz and what he does for a D partner.
He moves the puck really well. He sees the ice so good. He's a great offensive defenseman. But you know, he plays in his own end really well too. So he's been really helpful. He communicates well with me, and you know, he makes a great first pass. So I just try to get the puck over to him and let him do his thing.
So when you see the board and you see your plan there, like, what goes through your head knowing that, you know, you came here to seize an opportunity, and then there's an opportunity right there in front of you?
Yeah, it's good. Like, you never know, you know, how things are going to go, and whenever you get a chance to play in those minutes, you just want to make the best of it. And you know, I'm just taking it game by game. You know, I don't want to look too far ahead, but it's been fun so far.
When I spoke to you right after getting claimed, you talked about, geez, you know, this is really exciting because you felt like maybe the American League was where you headed. Now that you've been here for a little bit, how much have you appreciated this opportunity?
It's been great. It's been so good. You know, the organization has been great to me, and my teammates have been so good, and the coach has been great. And yeah, like you said, I didn't know what to expect just because I've never been through this process before, but it's been so nice, and, you know, I'm just happy to be here.
In terms of the kind of motivation and energy levels, I know the group's not where they want to be, but for you individually, it's still pretty high, I'd imagine.
Yeah, like, obviously the team's been, you know, I think as of late, the team, we've been playing pretty good, and, you know, it's sometimes, you know, you don't get the results you want, but you just stick to the process and what makes you successful. And, you know, I think we got rewarded with that last game, and the St. Louis game, I thought we played our game as well. So I think if you just keep doing those things, you know, you're going to get the results. But, yeah, big picture, obviously not where we want to be. And we're just looking to build, you know, from what we've had the last few games.
We always hear the you know, the term, hey, this time of year you're kind of playing for jobs, playing for next year. How much of that is going through your process right now?
I think, yeah, I mean, every day, every game is big. And, you know, I don't want to take any game for granted. And, yeah, no matter where you stand, you just want to go out and play your game. And, I'm just taking every game, just game by game, and hopefully, you know, play my game. And that's it.
Feeling settled and a little more comfortable now in a new city?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. It's hard. Like, it's obviously it's something I haven't really had to been through. So,
yeah.
But I think, you know, every day is getting a little bit easier, and, you know, the guys have made this a lot easier for me. So it's been good.
Last question. What has been the hardest part or the biggest adjustment?
I think just the new routine. You know, I was so set in what I was doing there and my routine. And, you know, you come to a new city and a new house, and, you know, your family's not there. And, obviously new systems and everything, but it's been an easy transition, and, you know, it's been great so far.
That is Joel Hanley. I chatted with him after practice on Monday. And, you know, whether you're Hanley, I think Braden Pahal has done a great job of taking advantage of an opportunity. Here's Hanley, who's going to play his third game against Anaheim on a pairing with Rasmus Anderson, which, again, I don't know if anybody had that on their bingo card coming into his waiver claim, but that's exactly where he's been. Miramanov is... certainly done a pretty good job at taking advantage of the opportunity he's been given. Lots of ice time, power play time. And then there's Nikita Ochocinc, who's trying to do the same. It's an interesting look. And, you know, each one of these guys, I think, is going to get some significant opportunity between now and the end of the regular season, because that's part of what this is all about going down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. This is sort of audition season. You know, where I think Joel Hanley deserves a lot of credit, I think back to watching the trade deadline coverage. We were sitting in the media lounge, and there was an interview with Chris Tanev. I can't remember which network, but I'm just going to say it was Sportsnet.
Let's say Sportsnet.
Yeah. Exactly. And he was talking about how different the Dallas Stars defensive structure is from the Flames. You know, he said this is a really big adjustment because these two teams play very differently. And if you talk to Joel Hanley, he'll tell you the same, and anyone you talk to around the Saddle Dome will tell you that they sort of knew Braden Pahal could fit because the structure Vegas plays is very similar to how Ryan Huska wants his team to play. They figured it would be the same with Miramanov because, again, coming from the Golden Knights,
right,
or the Silver Knights, and very similar. This is a pretty drastic departure from how Joel Hanley has played for the past handful of seasons, and that's where I think he deserves a lot of credit. He's actually their oldest defenseman, right? He's 32 years old, hasn't played a ton of NHL games, but he's been around a long time, so I don't think the poise and that should surprise you, but I think the way he's capitalized on his opportunity, knowing how different it is from how he was being asked to play a month ago, I think you got to give him a lot of credit there.
Yep. And I mean, I don't know how long this opportunity is going to continue for him. They seem to really like Pahal and Shillington on a pairing, though.
Yeah.
And Ryan Huska talked about that a little bit on Tuesday morning, about how it kind of likes how Pahal gives Shillington a little bit more freedom, because you know what, Pahal's not a big jump into the rush type guy. He's not going to be a guy who has a nose for getting into the rush or trying to generate offense. He's more of that steady, stay-at-home type defenseman, and they feel like it's a really good fit for what Shillington brings to the table. And you can understand why. So maybe we do see more of Hanley with Anderson here as we play out the string, or they play out the string.
Yeah, absolutely, because the you know, I think the idea now is to try to split up Uyghur and Anderson and put some of that veteran stability on two different pairings. Now, could that be different on the road in Winnipeg, for example? Could that be different against the Edmonton Oilers, where you're trying to shut down Connor McDavid? I think it certainly could, but I think they like the idea of having a little more balance. And, you know, the other thing I think we should just hit on or point out quickly when it pertains or as it pertains to the defensemen claimed off waivers is these are two guys that are also under contract for next season.
Yes.
at darn near the league minimum. And so that was something when Craig Conroy claimed Pahal and claimed Joel Hanley, that was part of the appeal, is that these guys aren't just 2 month stop gaps, they can potentially help us beyond this season.
And Ochocinc is, I'm getting it better. It's almost down pat, but not quite clearly. He is a restricted free agent, so remains under team control, and they immediately signed Miramanov after acquiring him in the Hannafin
trade.
A two-year extension. Yeah. So all those guys, all the new D that have been brought in since Pahal are all going to be with the team and with the organization beyond this season, which is part of why, and this is no disrespect to Dennis Gilbert, but it's part of why maybe they're prioritizing those guys getting
sure.
in over Gilbert, and they've got a bigger book on Gilbert, who's you know, finishing up his second year in the organization. Later on this week, we can get into a little bit maybe what some of the futures look like and how some of these guys fit in, but
yeah.
I just find the Hanley story kind of fascinating going down the stretch. Here's an NHL not journeyman, but he's a
guy. I think journeyman's absolutely fair.
Don't you have to play for a lot of teams to be a journeyman? Maybe not. He's definitely a vet.
Yeah.
He's 30 years old plus. Maybe he's a journeyman.
Yeah.
And
32 years old, less than 200 career games.
A lot of time in the American League.
Yeah.
And here he is.
I'm willing to go journeyman.
Yeah, I like that. I will accept your ruling.
Nice guy, too. Good chat there.
I really enjoy dealing with him.
Yeah.
He's nice.
Yeah, I had a good chat with him today as well. He's very, very, very kind. Just a really good guy to chat with.
No doubt about it. That's your look inside hockey. Inside Hockey's for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Calangary. Top products curated for Calgarians, and we mean every single one of you. Only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today as we start to wrap up this hour of Flames Talk. Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Cam and Shan, our producers. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.